So I just want to give a shout out to going outside while
welcome
social distancing.
To Cinema Chop Shop.
Michelle
watch,
and I, my
shop,
lovely wife Michelle, that is.
Drink.
Got out on the tandem kayak today. Some people refer to it as the divorce boat.
The divorce boat?
Yes. But we did not get divorced. In fact, we were fairly harmonious. But this is not a marriage counseling podcast. Welcome to Season 6, Episode 22 of Cinema Chop Shop. This is a movie podcast that concedes that remakes are going to happen, so why shouldn't movie buffs like us decide who is recast in those iconic roles? My name is...
Say it loud, I'm Travis and I'm proud, a.k.a. Papa's got a brand new Trav.
All right. I guess I deserve that for stepping on your like us part of the welcome.
Maybe just a little.
And I'm joined remotely by my co-host and co-producer, soul brother number Sean, a.k.a. the Sean father of soul.
Nice.
We are also extremely excited to welcome back to the show our regular guest, the hardest working woman in Chelsea-ness. Further description of the show, the tagline says, watch, chop, retrofit. Because essentially that's what we do here. We watch older movies, sometimes they're classic films with iconic actors, then we retrofit them by tweaking the design with new parts. Quick disclaimer, we're not actually in favor of remakes, reboots, and sequels. This is more of an exercise in satire and irony. We try to be funny.
And sometimes we succeed.
All right, so moving it along to movie news, and this is where Sean and I try to pay attention as much as we can to whatever news happenings that are occurring in the world of cinema, things that we think that our listeners might be interested in. And what's our first story, Sean?
Well, we've got our RIP. We only had one this week that we know of. And it's Irfan Khan. Am I saying that correctly?
Irfan Khan, the Indian actor who is the face of India in the West. And he died of complications due to Parkinson's.
All right. Next up, we've got IndieWire has posted an online guide. It's your virtual cinema guide in the age of coronavirus. So check them out if you want to see which cinemas are showing their stuff. I guess not cinemas, but production companies are
okay
putting their stuff online for you to stream.
Well, speaking of cinemas putting their stuff online, I sent a story to you about our somewhat local art house theater, the Nickelodeon in Columbia, South Carolina, is doing virtual screening rooms. And it's stuff that they would normally have in their theater, stuff that they would be showing, but you watch it in the comfort of your own home. You pay a $10 fee to have that movie accessible for, I think they said, a week.
Keeping it in that same vein of cinemas staying alive and repurposing themselves, there's a school in Kansas City, Missouri, that is going to do their graduation at a drive-in movie theater.
That is awesome.
Yeah, drive-in movie theaters. Is there anything they can't do?
I was actually looking at drive-in theaters this week, just in kind of a wistful, nostalgic way, just, you know, wishing I could actually go out and go to one. But one that was supposed to have opened near us in Hartsville, or this maybe Darlington County, the Center Road Drive-In, they've officially been listed as closed on the drive-in movie theater database.
Well, let's hope that's only temporary.
I've never been to a drive-in.
Really?
Never.
We'll have to do a group outing when we can reunite.
Hell yeah, we'll go to the Big Mo and camp out.
Shifting gears a little bit, this is one that we liked. The band Daft Punk is doing the music for the upcoming feature from Dario Argento.
Nice. Now, he's the old school Italian one, right?
Yes.
He's not the guy who made the new remake of Suspiria.
No, he is the old school guy. And while we're on the topic of sound, the Academy, the Oscars, they've announced that they are combining sound mixing and sound editing into one category, best sound.
So that's kind of a slap in the face to these hardworking people who have very different jobs.
Absolutely. The example that I give people is, how do you weigh a musical against an action film and say which one has the better sound? They're two totally different approaches to sound editing, explosions and gunfire and that sort of thing, and sound mixing, which is, you know, music and levels and making sure it all sounds harmonious and good.
Like what you're doing right now with the soundboard.
Yeah, sort of.
I think you deserve an Oscar, Sean.
But that's one bad thing about the Oscars, but one good thing about the Oscars and the upcoming Oscars, they're going to allow all streaming movies this year only to be eligible for Best Picture.
I think that it's great that they're doing that, but the caveat of this year only is kind of like, oh, we still have one foot stuck in yesterday.
Yeah, I agree with you there. The future remains unwritten. I think that this may open a lot of eyes in terms of how we will enjoy film for, you know, decades to come.
You could even say that there is no fate but what we make.
True. And we'll end movie news on a goofy note, no pun intended. Disney has announced, in all seriousness, on Twitter, that anyone using the hashtag #MayTheFourth be with you, you are agreeing to their conditions and terms to use whatever you post in their marketing without compensation.
All right. Well, glad we're all sitting around talking about this stuff. Wait, oh, the phone is ringing. It's time for the Department of Corrections Department with Chief Corrections Officer Dana.
Can you dig it? I knew that you could. Hi, Choppers. Alien Day, April 26th, is in reference to the fictional planet LV-426, where the Xenomorph was first unveiled. The new Batman movie has been pushed to October 1st, 2021. Roller derby started in the late 1800s as more of an endurance race. The contact we associate with it now started creeping in around the mid to late 1930s. Roller disco didn't really come into existence until the 1970s. Chloe 7G? I don't know, we're not there yet, we're only at 5G. Really, it's Chloe 70. Xanadu holds a very special place in my childhood, as my best friend, her sister, and I watched Xanadu several times as kids. I suppose we watched it on cable, but I can't really remember. Shout out to Amy and Allison if you're listening. I loved its craptacularity, even then. The soundtrack is fucking fantastic. I bought it on cassette first, then on CD, then finally on vinyl. If I can find it on 8-track, I'll buy it, but not that I'll be able to play it. I'll just have it on all four formats. All that said, Michael Beck looked like a long-lost Bee Gee to me, and I always kind of wondered if Gene Kelly lost a bet and that's how he ended up in the movie. Boyzone. You know, you'd think that with me being a raging hibernophile and a fan of boy bands in general, that I would know right away why there's one less boy in the afterpick of Boyzone, but I had to look it up. Turns out Stephen Gately passed away from a congenital heart defect in 2009 while on holiday in Mallorca with his husband. All right, y'all, I'm hustling off to Saturday Mass at the Paradise Garage. See you discons next week.
All right. Thank you, Dana, for that. We always appreciate your hard work. And I just wanted to let you know that being a person who can get things, I want to talk to you about those 8-tracks. And that will close the doors on the Department of Corrections Department for this week, which brings us to the theme of the episode in celebration, in honor of what would have been his 87th birthday on May the 3rd. We're talking about the movie roles of James Brown. Now, James Brown had many illustrious titles. The Godfather of Soul, Soul Brother Number One, the hardest working man in show business. But he started from humble beginnings. He was born right here in South Carolina. Isn't that right?
That's correct.
And he, his family moved to Georgia not long after that because Toccoa, Georgia, just over the South Carolina-Georgia border, is where he was raised.
They traveled on foot 45 miles.
Is that true?
That's true.
Oh, wow. Okay.
All right, so what else?
He liked hitting women.
So we're going to we're not going to lean too heavily on that. We do not advocate domestic abuse, even though in these times the domestic violence cases are growing.
No, I will jump in with a few other factoids about James Brown.
Yes.
He was very active in the Black civil rights movement. He kind of redefined himself in that period. He went from the that stylized coif of hair that he had early in his, yeah. in his career, went to the all natural afro, and spoke very strongly about being a proud Black man. He started a chain of soul food restaurants called James Brown's Golden Platter. It was meant to give aspiring African-Americans an opportunity to buy into a business and run their own business as a franchisee. Sadly, those did not succeed. It went under. But you know, more than just a singer, more than just a showman, the guy had higher aspirations.
And you can't think about James Brown without thinking about the way he was so theatrical in his stage presence and would appear to be so like spiritually involved in the music that he was making that he would get exhausted and he'd have to crouch down and kneel down and they would come and put the cloak on him.
No, there's not a they, there's a he. He had a cape man.
Cape man.
That was his job. He brought out the cape.
I want that job.
It's a pretty cushy position. And then he would get back up and he would work himself into another frenzy and they would throw the cape back on him again. And just some classic stuff that I don't think anybody else had been doing.
No, he was one of a kind.
Right on. Well, let's go ahead and talk about our Midnight Double features. And I know it was Slim Pickens this week, and Chelsea, you're sending this one out, right?
I am.
Because for the most part, James Brown played himself in movies. Sean, you had an idea to kind of tangentially go off of that, right?
I did.
Use it as a springboard. And what did your springboard spring to?
Well, I started out watching a documentary that originally aired on HBO from 2014 called Mr. Dynamite, The Rise of James Brown. And this is a documentary written and directed by Alex Gibney and produced by Mick Jagger. And it covers James Brown's career and his life. And really, since Mick Jagger was instrumental, he had made himself available for interviews. He talked about the Tammy Show. But before that, I did not realize that Mick Jagger attended one of James Brown's shows as a teenager. He referred to himself as a kid. He was in the balcony. And so if you imagine a little white Mick Jagger with this auditorium full of African-Americans, he got to see James Brown perform. And he said it really, really changed his whole outlook on performance and how to do music. Fast forward to the Tammy Show, the Rolling Stones had the dubious privilege of following James Brown's act in the right. line. And you talk about a tough act to follow.
Absolutely.
I wanted to talk, you know, use that connection, that impact that James Brown had on Mick Jagger as a musician and as a showman, and go into one of Mick Jagger's films, Free Jack, from 1992.
Okay.
This is a science fiction film. It has all the earmarks of early 90s view of the not too distant future, the trashy and urban dystopia. Emilio Estevez stars and Mick Jagger's in it, Rene Russo and Anthony Hopkins. It's about a corporation. This guy runs a corporation and they travel back in time and they snatch people from the jaws of death, just so the wealthy can implant their consciousness into this healthy body. Things don't work out. Emilio Estevez escapes his handler and hunter, played by Mick Jagger, and is on the run in the future, and he's trying to reunite with his love, Rene Russo, and get to the bottom of what's going on. But I do bring this up because in the film, they use sound bites from James Brown. And like they're in a car chase and they hop the curb and they're on the sidewalk and some dude jumps out of the way. Yeah, total James Brown clip. So obviously James Brown's influence really, really carried through Mick Jagger's life and his career to a deeper extent than I originally thought.
My two movies are related to his first band. When James Brown started his career, it was with a R&B group called The Famous Flames. That was one of their many names. They were also James Brown and His Flames, James Brown and the Fabulous Flames, so on and so forth. But the first one is called Ski Party from 1965. It's got no rating on Rotten Tomatoes, and it was directed by Alan Rafkin. And it is something of a musical. Basically, think of the template, and I believe I mentioned this last week, the template of a beach blanket movie, like a beach comedy, but transfer it into the Alps. So in this musical, college classmates Todd Armstrong, played by Frankie Avalon, and Craig Gamble, played by Dwayne Hickman, who was also a regular in those beach movies, head out on a group ski vacation and agree that if they're going to get girlfriends, they need to understand how women think. So when they arrive at the ski lodge, Todd and Craig dress up as young women and pal around with female classmates. Though this provides a bit of insight, the plan goes awry when a male classmate falls for the female version of Craig and pursues him all over the resort. So they're having a like a sing-along, a singing sock-hopping dance party in the ski lodge, and there's a knock on the door, and James Brown and the Fabulous Flames come in, but under the guise of the ski patrol, and and they've got three Saint Bernards with them, with barrels, you know, the whiskey barrels around their necks, and they're like, "Oh, aren't they cute?" And James Brown is like, "Yeah, actually, we just stopped in for a refill." And then they proceed to play music because one of the ski bunnies is like, "I know who you are. You're James Brown and His Famous Flames." It ties into my next movie, which you already mentioned. It's called The Tammy Show, or TAMI Show. Now, TAMI is an acronym for Teenage Music International, and this was from 1964. And it's got no rating, once again, on Rotten Tomatoes, but it does have a 93% audience score. It was directed by Steve Binder, and in 1964, the biggest names in rock and roll, pop, and soul gather at the Santa Monica Civic Auditorium, way different than the Santa Fe one. a packed house of teenagers go wild for Chuck Berry, who opens the show with one of his best-known songs, Maybelline. From there, the Beach Boys, the Rolling Stones, Marvin Gaye, and also James Brown and His Famous Flames. And it was really interesting because they gave away tickets at the local Santa Monica high schools, free tickets to this show.
That's so awesome.
And I'm just wondering how many kids were named Tammy 9 months later. So that's my double feature, Ski Party and The Tammy Show, which brings us to our feature segment, which is The Recast. And this is where we take a movie within our subject at hand, and we hypothetically recast the lead roles with contemporary actors. Actors who are
at the height of their powers.
Power. So the first one we're going to do is from 1980, the year of my birth. It's got an 84% on Rotten Tomatoes, directed by the great John Landis. It is the Blues Brothers. And so how do you guys feel about this movie?
Well, let's let Chelsea talk because I think she watched it for the first time this week.
I did yesterday.
Holy shit.
I know.
You had a mission from God.
I really was. I loved his accent, by the way. Made me feel like home.
Oh, the flat A's and yeah.
We're on a mission from Gad.
We're on a mission from Gad.
Gad. I loved it. So I don't think they needed to destroy every vehicle within Chicago city limits. but that was fine. Holden, my son, caught the end of it and he was like, this movie is from olden times. And I'm like, yeah, it's pretty old. It was made before I was born. And him trying to wrap his head around that, like, occupied him for a solid 15 minutes. So that was cool.
That makes me sad and feel old that 1980 is being referred to as olden times. Just a basic breakdown of the premise, though, for people who have not seen it, since it's from the olden times. Right. After his release from prison, Jake, played by John Belushi, reunites with his brother, Elwood, played by Dan Aykroyd, collectively known as the Blues Brothers, not the Bruise Brothers. Jake's first task is to save the orphanage that the brothers grew up in from closing by raising $5,000 to pay back taxes. The two are convinced that they can earn the money by getting their old band back together. We're getting the band back together. And however, after playing several gigs and making a few enemies, including the police, the brothers face daunting odds to deliver the money on time. There's Illinois Nazis.
That car chase was magnificent.
Are you talking about the one that goes through the mall?
No, not through the mall, where the Nazis go airborne, like above the skyscrapers, and they're just flying. And yeah. He's like, I've always loved you. And then they make a big hole in the ground.
Yep.
Awesome.
Look out, Muppets.
All right, so the roles that we're going to recast, we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 roles that we're going to do. The first one is Joliet Jake Blues, played by John Belushi, who was 31 at the time. And he would pass away just a few years later. Then we've got Elwood Blues, played by Dan Aykroyd. He was 28 at the time. I never realized that he was younger than John Belushi, but apparently Belushi got his start on SCTV around the same time as Dan Aykroyd's brother, his older brother.
Gotcha.
Then we've got the man of the hour, Reverend Cleophas James, played by James Brown. And this is one of the earliest scenes in the movie. This is where they receive the Holy Spirit and their vision that they are on a mission from God. And then we've got the mystery woman, played by a very young, very beautiful 24-year-old Carrie Fisher. And throughout the movie, she is constantly trying to assassinate Joliet Jake Blue's character.
I love the name of her salon.
Oh, remind me.
Curl Up and Die. But die spelled Y-E.
That's awesome. And then finally, the late, great John Candy, who was 30 at the time, playing Burton Mercer. And he's one of the police officers who's on their trail, correct?
Yep.
So, Chelsea, you're up first in the hot seat with John Belushi as Joliet Jake. Who did you think about for this?
Well, clearly he is the cooler brother. Like, he just does not have to try. He just is.
I think I would disagree with you. I think that Elwood, in the literal sense of the term cool, is much cooler. Like, he doesn't overreact. He doesn't blow his top. Whereas Jake has a very volatile temper and will throw his hat on the ground and almost throw a fit when things don't go right.
I don't know. I look at, like, when they're performing. And
okay, true. So, like, stage presence.
Yeah, he's just more subtle. And Dan Aykroyd has to try very hard. It just feels like. Anyway.
I agree.
My actor is 28. I don't really know him from any movies, although he was in something called After Everything, a movie called Slice and Molly's Game. I know him from Stranger Things as Steve Harrington. I went with Joe Keery.
Okay, yeah. Interesting. All right. It's interesting. One of the things you mentioned will come up again. So Sean, what was your pick for Jake?
All right. So the Blues Brothers, the reason they're kind of a non sequitur is that there are a couple of white guys affecting old blues men.
Yes.
And I've kind of fast forwarded that and retrofit it for today, or future fitted it for today. Okay. And pretty much any young person affecting a blues man would be kind of out of place. So I went with African-American gentlemen to play the Blues Brothers.
Cool.
This actor is a musician, and he's very talented as an actor. He was in The Martian. He was in The Lion King. He was in Solo, A Star Wars Story, as well as Atlanta. I'm talking about Donald Glover.
There you go, man. Mm-hmm. My turn. Joliet Jake Blues, originally portrayed by John Belushi, was 31 at the time. My actor is also 31 now. He's in a little movie called Balls to the Wall. He was in an Easter movie called Hop. And he's also in We Bought a Zoo and the movie Us. His name is Dustin Ybarra. All right, so Dan Aykroyd played Elwood Blues at the age of 28. And Chelsea, who was your pick for that?
My actor's 32, and he was in Pitch Perfect and Pitch Perfect 2. And I watch him weekly on Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist.
Uh-huh.
I went with Skylar Astin because when I see him perform on Pitch Perfect or this television show, it reminds me of Dan Aykroyd trying too hard. Like, his dance moves just go a little bit above and beyond, almost to the point where it's goofy. And I don't think that's what he's trying to do.
Sean, your pick for Elwood.
All right. So my Elwood is 31 years old, and he has been in films such as Get On Up, the dramatization of James Brown's life as Little Richard. She's All That, Gridiron Gang, but I noticed him at first in You're the Worst, and I've always said he reminds me of Donald Glover. It's Brandon Michael Smith.
Okay.
And if you look at their...
Yeah, I know who you're talking
those
about.
Those headshots, I mean, they're brothers.
All right, well, my... no... Did I already say? Okay, my pick is from Chicago. Well, actually, he's from Rochelle, Illinois. And he's an American comedian, podcast personality. I couldn't even find his age. He's that secretive about it. He played Mark Wahlberg on Doug Loves Movies. His name is Daniel Van Kirk.
Oh.
Daniel Van Kirk also is the co-host of Dumb People Town, a podcast that I've been getting into recently.
Oh, love Dumb People Town with the Sklar brothers.
Yeah, it's so good.
Drink. So good. Drink.
So good.
So next up, we've got the man himself, James Brown, playing Reverend Cleophas James. Cleophas? Cleophas James?
I think Cleophas.
And Chelsea? You watched the movie for the first time. What did you think of this performance?
I loved this. It was great. Immediately. And it made sense to me why I thought of this person when you were talking about James Brown having a cape man. It all clicked for me. And why I made this pick. I gender flipped this. I went with a female. Mm-hmm. And it's based on her performance in Sister Act. And I went with Goldberg.
Good.
Because she literally does that whole thing.
For a second, I thought you were going to say Queen Latifah.
No.
That would work too, though.
It would.
Nice. All right, Sean?
All right, my actor is 48 years old, and he has been in films such as Pineapple Express, This is the End, and the Hot Tub Time Machine franchise. He is from Chicago, Illinois. It's Craig Robinson.
I like it. That's
great, dude. Yeah, I can see him in the like Baptist robes.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
All right. So my Reverend Cleophas James is a musician primarily. He's only been in two feature films. In one of them, he plays himself because it's a documentary. It was called Michael Jackson's Journey from Motown to Off the Wall. But he also had a minor role in the film Uncut Gems this past year. He is The Weeknd.
Oh, okay. Nice.
The Weeknd is going to be my James Brown. Next up, we've got the Mystery Woman. I find Carrie Fisher in this role sexier than Princess Leia. So she was 24 at the time. And Chelsea, how did you feel about this character?
I loved her. I love the name of her salon. I worship Carrie Fisher. This was hard to recast, and then there was really only one choice. My actress is 28. She was in Booksmart. She's in the new Star Wars.
Yes.
I went with Billy Lord.
Very nice.
I found a 25-year-old actress who kind of has the big Carrie Fisher eyes. And I think that's what drew me to her. She was in Captain Fantastic. She was in Jessica Jones. She was in Bloodfather. And most people would know her from her role as Starlight in the Amazon TV series The Boys. It's Erin Moriarty.
Nice. Also, you missed an opportunity. The Bloodfather of Soul. All right. Well, my pick is 22 now. She was in the film Boy Erased. She's also in the third season of Stranger Things. And she's on a Netflix series that I've been hyping called Outer Banks. She's from Charleston, South Carolina. Her name is Madeline Klein.
Maddie Klein, huh?
Yeah. Have you guys watched that show yet?
No.
Not yet.
I think that Chelsea's going to like it more than Sean.
Okay.
Because I have taste?
Yep.
Sick burn.
Whoa.
All right. We got one more for this one, right?
Yep. Yes.
We've got Burton Mercer, portrayed by John Candy, who was 30 at the time. God, golden age John Candy.
True.
And so he's playing a police officer who is pursuing the Blues Brothers, along with the real good old boys and the Illinois Nazis and all kinds of people. Oh, did you guys see Steven Spielberg's cameo?
Who was he?
He's the clerk in the Cook County tax office.
Not true.
No, that is true.
No, that's Frank Oz.
Are you sure?
I will stake my life on it.
All right, we're going to leave this up to Dana.
I'm staying out of this one.
All right, well, stay out of that, but stay in this. What is your pick for Burton Mercer, Chelsea?
Oh, God. He's older. He's like 60-something. I don't remember. And he was in Marriage Story, but the whole reason I picked him was an episode he did of Drunk History, and I want him to be drunk while he does these few parts, because I want to hear him ask everybody if they want orange whips. I went with Rich Fulcher.
Yes!
All right, remind me who he is.
He was the guy that was drunk who did the Abe Lincoln episode.
Oh my God.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I gotcha. I can picture him in my head right now.
Love Rich Fulcher. That's funny.
Awesome. All right, Sean, how about you?
All right, I kept this guy younger. And he needs to bring his comedy to an American audience. I think he was the funniest character in Game of Thrones, if there is such a thing.
Oh, yeah.
He's 31. He was in American Satan. He was in Patient Zero and Roger. It was Samwell Tarly, John Bradley.
I love it.
Oh, yeah.
And I took the liberty of giving him sunglasses and a mustache on his headshot.
Sweet. I didn't even make visuals this week, guys.
Boy, this coronavirus has really got you slacking.
I know.
All right, so my actor is older. He's 47 now. He is a stand-up comedian, but he's also had parts on TV shows like The Shield. He has hosted several shows like The X Show, Trip Flip, and Bert the Conqueror. He was the inspiration for the character of Van Wilder. I went with Bert Kreischer.
Okay, I know who you're talking about.
Bert Kreischer. All right, so obviously a strong recommend from me. What about you guys?
Yeah, recommend from me too.
Watch this one, skip Blues Brothers 2000. Should we go ahead and go into intermission?
Yes.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby.
And get ourselves some
soul food.
All right, Chop Shoppers, thank you for bearing with us during intermission. This is your host, Travis. And I just have one question for you, Sean. What is one way we could make our podcast more prominent?
Oh, if our listeners would rate and review us on iTunes.
Rate, review, and subscribe to us on iTunes.
And pin your friends down and force them to do it.
Make them go ahead and do a review. We're very under review.
Like make it a whole pyramid scheme. Get the people under them to do it and multiply.
A Podsy scheme.
Ooh, I like it.
Yes. You folks who are listening right now, it would be fantastic if while you're listening or right after, you don't have to stop the show, don't stop the show. But if afterwards you could go to iTunes and give us a review or a rating, that would be awesome as well. Or on whatever podcatcher app it is that you're listening to us. We're on a few of them. And also, be aware of our online presence. We have a Facebook page. It's facebook.com/cinemachopshop. We're hosted natively online on Podbean. It's Cinema Chop Shop on Podbean. And our Twitter handle is @CinemaChopShop. We do a lot of stuff on there, like our movie marathon, where Sean consistently kicks my ass. Also, our email address is cinemachopshop@gmail.com. You can email us anytime. We check it frequently. The beers that we check in after intermission, you're about to find out about some, are always checked in on Untappd. That's UNTAPPD. And we are Cinema Chop Shop on there. Once again, thank you to you, the listeners. Thank you for tuning in. And enjoy the rest of the show.
And now, on with the show.
All right. Welcome back, Chop Shoppers. Thank you for bearing with us during intermission. And when we come back from intermission, Sean, what is it that we like to do?
Beer check-in.
And you've got one for us today. Is that correct?
Yeah, and it's kind of on theme. It's from 13 Stripes Brewing Company out of Taylor's, South Carolina. I finally got their city right. It's called Freeborn Hazy Tropical IPA. It's a 7.2% IPA. And the can's interesting. It features what looks to be a colonist sitting by a campfire talking to a African-American, presumably a freed slave of sorts. And there's a quote attached. It says, "The colonists are by the law of nature freeborn, as indeed all men are, white or black. James Otis Jr., the rights of the British colonists asserted and proved, 1763.
Okay, gotcha. Elaborate as to how this relates to James Brown.
Well, James Brown was an activist in, you know, the civil rights movement.
While you enjoy that and I enjoy this crowler of pixels from Seminar Brewing, that's seminarbrewing.com.
This is exactly what I would consider to be the definition of a tropical IPA. It has tropical fruit notes.
A little bit of pineapple.
Yeah, like pineapple and mango, guava. This is good stuff. I like the beer coming out of 13 Stripes. So this is right in league with what I expect from them.
Let's go ahead and move it into the 2020 movie marathon. And I should explain for new listeners, this is where Sean and I and Chelsea and whoever else would like to participate watch as many movies as we can throughout the calendar year, and we check them in on Twitter with the hashtag 2020 Movie Marathon, or whatever year it might happen to be. And today is, what day of the year is it? The 122nd day of the year. Sean, what number are you on?
I'm at 168.
168. Chelsea?
Oh, I slowed down. I'm like at 120.
So you're right around the benchmark, though.
Yeah.
You're okay.
Yeah, you're almost on the day. If it wasn't a leap year, you would be only one away from the day. I'm on 175, fuckers.
Woo!
Yeah, so like the quarantine, the self-isolation, the stay at home has lended itself a little bit to my movie marathon. And so, Sean, what's your first check-in going to be this week?
All right. So I'm going to jump in with one that I saw on the Criterion Channel. And this is the very definition of the launchpad of the French New Wave. It is Breathless.
Okay.
And this is a film by Godard.
Jean-Luc Godard.
And it stars Seberg and Belmondo, which were the pair were in a film I just checked in a couple of weeks ago. This is a very Parisian film. You've got these ne'er-do-wells. She herself is a professional, yet she kind of likes to hang out with the bad boy. Belmondo is a criminal. He's killed someone. He's on the run from the law. They're kind of shacked up in this very mod apartment in the middle of Paris. And as I said in my review, being bad never looked so cool. The film itself is very unpolished. It's very raw in the way it's cut. There's some very, really abrupt jump cuts in the film.
Okay.
But at the same time, it evokes that so cool Paris vibe. And it's just a neat film. And it very much defines that art house cinema kind of feel.
Chelsea, what movie would you like to check in?
It's a documentary, and it's called Toxic Beauty. And the main premise is talking about talc in Johnson & Johnson's baby powder and how it very much causes cancer. And then they kind of dive a little deeper into some of the other harmful things that are in beauty products. And the one that always gets me is if they're not using like sulfates or parabens, they're using formaldehyde and they change the name. So if you look at the ingredients list, you're not going to know what it is.
Unless you have
a chemistry background. It's a bunch of different things. So like one of the main ones that I see a lot, so they'll call it like formalin, methylene glycol, methylene oxide, things that don't really sound like it, but it's formaldehyde.
All right. Well, my first check-in is going to be number 171, and it is the American remake of Force Majeure from 2014. It's called Downhill, and it's just as funny as the original, but in a different way because, you know, they were gearing it for American audiences. I'm going to try to say this name. Christopher Hivju, who is Tormund Giantsbane on Game of Thrones, appears in both movies, but in different roles.
Oh, cool.
So the film is almost a shot-for-shot remake. It's actually funny because just like the Gus Van Sant remake of Psycho is a shot-for-shot, except they add the masturbation scene. They do the same in this, but except it's Julia Louis-Dreyfus. After she has gone out with a sexy ski instructor, she goes back into the bathroom at the ski resort and tries to, you know, play DJ a little bit in the downtown.
Oh my God.
And she ends up crashing through the bathroom stall door.
Oh no.
So in that way, those films are analogous.
Yeah, I'll be quick about this one. This one's called I See You. This is a crime thriller. Basically, the theme of this movie is what goes around comes around. It's a series of a whole shit ton of subplots about frogging.
I don't know. Is that where you stick a frog up your butt?
No, this is where you break into someone's home and live in their home without them knowing that you're there. In the meantime, there's a series of abductions of children in this particular town. The person's whose house that the squatters are in, he is the lead investigator. There's a lot of contrived things going on here. But the thing I want to comment on most is Helen Hunt. She is in this film, almost unrecognizable. And I want to ask her, Helen, what happened to your face?
Oh, no.
I mean, we all saw K-Pax. We know how old you are. When in the world did you have an accident with a wax museum?
So do you think that she had some plastique?
I don't know what she had. She looks like
explosive.
Check it out. Take a look at it. She looks like she may have been crossbred with one of the characters from Avatar.
Oh,
my next check-in is going to be a zombie movie, and it's called Blood Quantum. And I think it's based on a comic book or a book, and it's about a zombie outbreak that happens in Canada.
Andrew.
Chelsea and Buck. Right outside of a native people's reservation. And as it turns out, the indigenous people are the only ones who are immune. Things proceed from there. It's been on my list for a while, and I recommend it.
My next check-in is a documentary from 2016 called American Anarchist, about the guy that wrote the anarchist cookbook.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah. It's sad. He takes a lot of responsibility. I mean, a good 90%. You can tell he's pretty tormented about it. He ends up becoming a teacher and like helping underprivileged children all over the world. And the fact that this stuff was used in school shootings like Columbine and stuff really, really eats away at him. It was sad. Yeah, he was like, I was young and dumb and stupid, and it shouldn't be what it is.
All right, final check-in for me. This is the one I buried the lead. This one I'm super excited about. It's called Possessor, not Professor, but Possessor. It's a new release, and it is directed by the son of David Cronenberg. This is right in the family lineage. This movie is so cool and weird and bizarre. The way I describe it is, if you can imagine the movie Looper, but substitute time travel with skinwalking.
Oh, okay.
You've got the plot. Basically, these assassins are inserting themselves into other people to achieve their kills.
So does it take place in the American Southwest?
No.
Because skinwalkers are a particular type of crypto.
Yes, yes, exactly. But you get my drift. They're riding passenger, or actually they're taking over someone else's consciousness. Jennifer Jason Leigh is in this as the handler of the main assassin, who is getting a little complicated in her handling of the aftermath, I guess you would call it.
Gotcha.
She achieves one kill. She moves on to the next kill. Then things get messy. And as things get messy, they get Cronenberg. There's weird sex. There is bizarre special effects. There's crazy makeup. There are strange dream sequences. I didn't know that this was Brandon Cronenberg until after I saw the film, formulated my opinion, and went to go check it in. Then I saw his name and everything locked into place. This has a huge recommendation for me if you like David Cronenberg stuff. This is such a fucking cool movie.
All right, so my final check-in, my third and final check-in, will be a movie called Hail Caesar. And it is not the one that you think it is, the Coen Brothers movie. It's actually from 1994, and it is a post-Brat Pack film directed by Anthony Michael Hall, starring him, Robert Downey Jr., Samuel L. Jackson, and Judd Nelson. The main character, whose name is Julius Caesar, is an aspiring rocker who loves a girl who's kind of out of his league, and her father is super rich, and they make a wager that he can't raise $100,000 in like 2 months or something like that. And if he does, then he gets to get his daughter, which is already very problematic because you're betting about a human being. My review said, the cocaine budget must have surpassed that of the film itself. Because everybody was like sweating profusely.
Oh, God.
and had like super dilated pupils. So that means that it's time to go into the second part of our feature segment, The Recast Continued.
Part two.
The sequel.
Something About James Brown.
Yeah! I got you! Bow, 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 bow! The movie that we're talking about is from 1983. It's only got a 33% on Rotten Tomatoes. I think that is a little bit low.
I think it's a little high.
Oh, it's called Dr. Detroit. And so, Sean, you watched this for the first time this week, right?
I did. And I do want to comment that Michael Pressman has an illustrious career today, directing for television. However, after Dr. Detroit, besides one other flick, his other directorial credit is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, Secret of the Ooze.
Secret of the Ooze, man. Well, that's not bad, but he probably peaked with Dr. Detroit. Will you give us a brief rundown of the premise of this movie since you just rewatched?
Sure thing. Small-time pimp in Chicago, Smooth Walker, played by Howard Hessman, is in arrears to Mom, another mafioso in Chicago. He owes her about $80,000, and he needs to come up with a scheme to divert her attention while he gets the fuck out of town. They meet Dan Aykroyd's character, Clifford Scridlow. He is the son of the dean of a made-up college in Chicago.
Monroe.
And the college in and of itself is in some financial straits. They need money to stay afloat. So Smooth meets up with Aykroyd's character. They take him out on a night on the town. Of course, Smooth is flanked by his four beauties, the blonde, the Jewish princess, the African-American beauty, as well as the mysterious Asian. Yes. And they show him a good time, along with their driver, by the way, who is not Bubba from Forrest Gump. I was surprised to learn.
What?
And it's not the guy that played Bubba. I thought he was, but he's not.
Why?
He looked just like him.
No.
Not to get too deep into it. He runs afoul of Mom after Howard Hessman leaves the country.
Yep.
And he, in order to cover his tracks, they concoct a alter ego called Dr. Detroit. He's the new bad guy in town who's challenging Mom for her piece of the pie.
That's part of Smooth Walker's getaway plan, is to say that he's got a new partner who's moving
right
in and forcing him out.
Yes, yes. He's giving him the squeeze. Thank you.
Yes. All right. So we've got 1, 2, 3, 4 roles that we're going to recast in this one. The first one, of course, is Clifford Scridlow, played by Dan Aykroyd, who was 31 at the time. Then we've got Smooth Walker, the middle-aged white guy pimp. Then we've got Monica, who is one of his girls, played by Donna Dixon. And what did you want to say about Donna Dixon?
Regarding Donna Dixon, she and Dan Aykroyd met on the set and they got married and have been married ever since.
And then finally, we've got, once again, the man of the hour, James Brown, who was 50 at the time, playing himself as the band leader at the Players' Ball. All right, so first up is Clifford Scridlow, played by Dan Aykroyd, 31 at the time. Chelsea, what do you think?
Okay, so I didn't really watch this movie. I heard the breakdown and I saw clips on YouTube. However, I did see the opening scene when he was speed walking.
Yeah.
Which was magnificent.
To Devo.
Yeah, that was great. And I just thought about, who do I want to see speed walk in short red shorts? And the answer was pretty clear. I want to see Dan Levy from Schitt's Creek speed walk in short red shorts.
Another Second City lineage, if you will.
So Chelsea, keep that in mind when you hear my pick.
Okay.
That's awesome. I'm not going to lead up to mine or hype it because Chelsea's already used him. I also picked Skylar Astin.
Oh, shit.
He is more age appropriate in this role at age 32 to Dan Aykroyd's 31.
All right. Well, my pick for Clifford Scridlow is Much older. He's 50 now. He was in the TV show Community. He was also in, I think, most or not, if not all of the Hangover movies. And he's also an actual doctor. His name is Ken Jeong.
You're doing Ken Jeong? Wow.
Yes. Ken Jeong is going to be my Clifford Scridlow. Can you see him doing the power walking?
Yeah, definitely.
All right. So the next role that we're going to recast is Smooth Walker, portrayed by Howard Hessman, which I was kind of, it was kind of on like the tip of my brain when I was watching it, but he was the original teacher in Head of the Class.
Yes, this is true. And also Dr. Johnny Fever from WKRP in Cincinnati.
There you go. All right. So Smooth Walker, originally portrayed by Howard Hessman, 43 at the time. Chelsea?
So again, I didn't watch this and I saw clips. And I just imagine this character as being kind of sleazy and gross and maybe needing to take a shower. So I went with Aaron Paul because he always looks like he needs to take a shower.
The kid from Breaking Bad?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I kept mine kind of like the clean thing. It's funny you should mention Howard Hessman's role in Head of the Class as the teacher of a bunch of gifted kids, because my actor is also the teacher of a bunch of gifted kids in his current television part. He was in The Strangers. He was in Serenity. He was in Crank. He's also in It's Always Sunny, but I'm referencing him as Jack Griffin from AP Bio, Glenn Howerton.
Nice. He's in a couple of movies, but he gets shot in the head in both of them.
Yes.
Bummer.
My actor is 65 now. He came to the attention of most people in the TV show or the HBO series Oz. He was also in a Coen Brothers movie called The Lady Killers. He is a ruthless music teacher in Whiplash, and you'll find him on a lot of State Farm insurance commercials. J.K. Simmons.
Bum, 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 bum.
We are farmers.
J.K. Simmons is my pimp, Smooth Walker.
I love him.
Next up, we've got Monica, played by Donna Dixon, who is, or at the time, was 26. She is not the bottom bitch. She's like second or third from the bottom bitch. And Chelsea, who's your pick?
This was described to me as the pretty blonde.
Yeah.
I went with that. And I chose the prettiest blonde. Well, I think she's the prettiest. I went with Blake Lively.
Oh, okay.
Well, I went with a blonde that I could conceivably believe as a hooker. Sorry, a sex worker. Sorry, lady.
Night.
She's from Orlando, Florida, where all the classy ladies are born. And she's 26 years old. She was in the film The Late Bloomer, the remake of Flatliners. The movie adaptation of Baywatch, and most recently as Chastity, the party girl in Fantasy Island, who was Charlotte McKinney.
Oh, yeah, I can see that. All right, well, Sean, you're really going to like my pick because she's 27 now. She's in Ready or Not, she's in The Babysitter, and she's in Guns Akimbo. Her name is Samara Weaving. All right, we got one more, right?
Yep. Yes.
We've got James Brown as the band leader of the band that performs with Dr. Detroit at the Players Ball. All right, so James Brown was 50 at the time playing the band leader. And Chelsea, who did you pick for this?
Sean just said that he performs at the end. So I thought about who I wanted to see perform, and I want to see Smokey Robinson and the Miracles get back together and rock the Players Ball. So I picked Smokey Robinson.
Nice. Smokey Robinson also performs in the Tammy Show.
Oh, Ooh.
Wow. Bringing it together.
With the miracles. Very cool. All right, Sean, what did you think?
I should say one thing. I don't know what made this jump in my brain, but James Brown actually did like a turnover on his band. Like he like ditched a lot of the Flames.
Yeah.
And kind of picked up a new band. And I was surprised to learn that his bass player was Bootsy Collins.
Oh, no shit.
Of Parliament Funkadelic.
Yes.
As James Brown made the move from soul to funk soul, think Sex Machine, that's when Bootsy was in the band. But I digress. So my recast, he's 51 years old, and he was from Chicago, Illinois, by the way. this actor has been in such films as Crash, Four Brothers, Iron Man, and Hustle and Flow, as well as the TV series Empire. I'm casting Terrence Howard.
Oh, yeah. He's great.
Yeah, Terrence Howard's got some soul.
Very good. All right, so is it my turn?
Bring it down. Close the show. Bring down the house.
All right, so he's 27 years old now. He has appeared as him, not as himself, but in live action in the movie Slice. He also provides voices in Trolls World Tour, The Lion King, and appeared as himself in the Between Two Ferns movie, I'm going with Chance the Rapper.
Nice.
Love it. He's got a little bit of soul. I'm going to say soft recommend.
Oh, I'm going to say the lowest not recommend.
If you're bored, it's free on YouTube.
If you're in quarantine and you want to know what the fuck we're talking about,
watch Xanadu instead.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we're going to go ahead and go to a bonus segment, which is going to be a honey roast. I'm feeling a little bit more generous today. Not quite as bloodthirsty. And our honey roast is going to be of Harold Ramis. Anybody have anything nice to say about Harold Ramis?
He was in some movies.
Come on.
He's a comedic genius.
He was fucking fantastic. You've got the writer of Groundhog Day, the writer of Stripes.
Yep.
The writer of Ghostbusters. You've got an actor in Ghostbusters.
He was Seth Rogen's dad in Knocked Up.
That's right.
Aww.
Yeah, nothing but love for...
So tell the listeners, how did you come about this tangential honey roast?
All right, because Harold Ramis relates back to Dan Aykroyd via Ghostbusters and via SCTV. And Dan Aykroyd relates to our two recasts with James Brown because he was in Dr. Detroit and the Blues Brothers. Also, it was funny earlier that you mentioned white guys affecting blues musicians. Because Dan Aykroyd took it all the way. He's the co-creator of the House of Blues. He's the host of the weekly blues radio show. It's also kind of a commentary on the fact that white musicians really stole the blues and rock and roll genre from black people. We're going to go ahead and wrap it up on that bright note. We want to thank you, Chelsea, for being our guest.
Well, thanks for having me.
And do you have anything you want to plug?
My phone. I need to plug it in. It's going to die.
True. Michelle's phone almost died when we were coming back from kayaking. It was a real touch and go situation. I want to thank the engineer, my co-host and co-producer, the brew boss himself, Sean. Thank you for doing what you do every week.
Yeah, man, it's my pleasure.
And do you know what next week's episode is?
We got a late entry into next week's episode. I picked up on the fact that we have the what would have been his 100th birthday. The innovator in film, Saul Bass. This is a graphic designer and artist who changed the way we watch movies by introducing very interesting, stylized title credits. We're going to do films influenced or films by Saul Bass.
Very nice. And so I don't have a legit trivia question, but can you just name one movie where he did the intro segment?
Yeah, West Side Story is going to probably be one of your big ones.
Yes.
The original Ocean's 11. And probably most recently in public consciousness would be Casino.
For people who are not familiar with his graphic style, he was very into like angular shapes, hard edges.
Cutout shapes even.
Yeah. And there's like a minimalist.
Very minimalist style. There's a lot of movie posters that he did as well to go along with his film. The Shining would be one that comes to mind right away.
Absolutely. All right. Well, we want to go ahead and plug the podcast itself. Please rate, review, and subscribe to us on iTunes or whatever podcatcher app it is that you're hearing us on. We are hosted natively online at podbean.com. Just search for Cinema Chop Shop. Our Twitter is at Cinema Chop Shop, and our Facebook is Cinema Chop Shop. Also, our email is cinemachopshop@gmail.com. And the beers that we drank today will be checked in on Untappd. That's UNTAPPD. We are Cinema Chop Shop on there. Finally, farewell. Thank you, Chop Choppers. And please remember to watch, chop, retrofit.
And tip your band members.